This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Affect you. Mitch McConnell won't bring back the Senate early, but says background checks and red flag laws are up for discussion. This in the wake of what happened in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, the mass shootings. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney. We are so weary of that and weary and have our antenna up for any noises that we see in public. This past week, we had a couple of different places where there was a backfiring of a motorcycle, and people thought it was gunfire because of that popping sound, and immediately ran in Times Square in an indoor mall in Utah. The similar situation at the USA Today. They evacuated their building. So people are on edge, and there are actually warnings, including from Amnesty International, to be careful if you go to the United States of America because of the murders. And Venezuela, of course, they put that on their sites, too, warning people to come to the United States. But I can never remember a time ever in my life seeing that. For other countries, of course, our State Department putting up warnings. But I've never seen that back at the United States. And that's how scary it was to so many people when they saw what was going on. So Mitch McConnell, who is nursing some surgery and an injury that he had on a shoulder, did say when he was speaking to a local radio station that, yeah, we're going to put the issues of background check legislation and red flags, all of that, we're going to do that when we come back from our summer recess, but we're not coming back early. The Democrats are saying come back early. But he's saying we're not going to do that. We will talk about those two things. We will do it. He said he won't call them back because, if we did that, we would have people scoring points and nothing would happen. That was his opinion. He said, if people come back prematurely and you didn't get the full House anyway, you know, Senate and House, both chambers, then if you don't have a full vote, it doesn't matter. And there's truth to that, right? Because they're not going to come up with a law and have some kind of a vote. It's not going to happen. So they have to wait till the session is over. So that's over the August break when they come back. And people are so diligent about the conversation. I think that it'll be up for discussion. I don't think that's going to go away. I don't know why there's this panic that it's going to go away, because I really don't think that's going to happen. In fact, McConnell said in a conversation with the press that the two agreed they want a result and not endless finger pointing. Bravo. Let's hope they stick to that. The blame game is weak of that. So ail your fractured shoulder, come back from the break and take all of this up so we can move forward and get action and not just reaction to something horrific that happens. There are more people. I did a little check today, and I randomly picked places in different areas of the United States where I could get a hold of somebody, by the way, and asked in states where I knew, concealed and carry, was there more of a demand? And not one place said there wasn't. I don't know if they would tell me, oh, yeah, it's like really slumped off. But I did have somebody tell me, and this was in San Antonio, Texas, that normally the summer might be a little bit slower, and then it picks up because they offered these various classes. And they do have active shooter drills, too, that they added them because there were people that were asking. So that is really happening. I think that is the reality that you're saying to yourself out there, you know, it's got to be on me to protect me. So if I'm someplace where there's a crowd, and, of course, I look for the exits, I check out the place, I make sure where I'm going to go, but it's on me to decide what I'm going to do should the worst thing happen. And when you say, well, that can happen there, right? That's what they said at the Gilroy Garlic Festival. That's what they said in Las Vegas at a country concert where they were at the end of the strip or the beginning, depending on how you look at it. But they weren't in a place where you'd think, well, yeah, of course, this is very dangerous. No. Same thing for all those people that were milling around the streets in Dayton, Ohio. Same thing for the people in El Paso that were in a Walmart thinking they were picking up school supplies, food, or whatever it is they were going to get. It certainly wouldn't have happened there. And that's why I think more people are saying, yeah, you got to make the decision. For you, yourself, your family, whatever, you make the decision on what's right. And to be more aware of your surroundings, everybody should be thinking that anyway. I don't care how old you are or what the scenario looks like for you, small town, big suburb, giant city, be aware of what's around you. It makes complete sense to do that. So that you, no matter what the situation is, you have more of a chance should something untoward happen, and then, or worse than untoward, heinous happen, then you know that you've got a chance, a fighting chance anyway, because that's the key. Giving yourself an opportunity to survive. And boy, this is something we never thought about 30 years ago, right? Never. Immigration is more than the third rail now. Border arrests dropped 24%, they say, from June to July. And, of course, we did have the big raids the other day in Mississippi. The bus is ready to go, smooth sailing. Kid care, his child care was an issue. The cuffs put on, boom, getting people out of the factories, easy. And U.S. immigration officials say they did, though, apprehend fewer migrants along the U.S.-Mexico border in July than they did in June. It was a decline. There were 72,000 arrests in July along the southern border, 94,000 plus in June. How about that? So they say the situation is improving, but the CPB commissioner, Mark Morgan, says, oh, we're still in a full-blown crisis. So don't think that we are not. Don't think at Customs and Border Protection that this is smooth sailing, that things have really dramatically dropped. He says no. In fact, a senior Border Patrol officer said that they have to wait till the end of August to see where if the trends hold up and if less people are coming across or what that looks like. And the face of the people coming across, I've mentioned this before, very different. In other words, where it used to be single men coming over for jobs, now it's families. And we understand that because we're seeing the separation of families. And what a horror that is, especially when some of those images are captured and they're pumped out all over the place. And then the arguments of how do you get kids reunited with the family and all of that. By the way, because of what I started the show with, saying it's up to you to take responsibility for your life, your family's lives, as far as where you're traveling. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has been searching for private contractors who could gather and feed to law enforcement amounts of user data straight from social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Because if they're going to battle terrorist groups and domestic threats, the FBI says they have to be able to do that so they could stop the threat before it becomes real. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Just listen to what Wayne has to say.
I have been taking it for about 2 years, and I had really bad heart palpitations. And since I've been taking it, I don't have any major episodes at all anymore. I'm 76 years old, and I still play competitive basketball. Well, of course, I've taken care of myself really good since I was 60, but Extendivite really helped the blood pressure, really helped the... I used to get really bad episodes of heart palpitations, just skipping beats and double beats. But also, I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate your broadcast. They're just really refreshing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Shot at in Mexico? 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas? Riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet? Scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success? And why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com. The numbers. If we look around, that's all you'll see. I always say this. It's so true, right? Try it. Just try to get through a day where you don't say anything about numbers, right? Like consumer advocates say, there's a growing effort in the $11 billion debt collection industry to recover debts previously written off by financial firms. Oh, more phone calls for some people, right? Debt collectors lose the right in many states to sue consumers after 3 or more years, but there is a loophole. If the consumer makes a payment against his or her own will, that can be used to try to revive the life of the debt. Oh, boy, that sounds scary, doesn't it? In 2016, a debt collector actually sued for the remaining debt and successfully garnished 19 cents from her checking account before dropping the lawsuit when she challenged it. How about that? This was in Oklahoma, 5-year statute of limitations. So this was somebody who made a payment, her last payment in 2013. So they argued about when was her payment made, and they went back and forth on that. But what's really interesting is it's an $11 billion industry, the $11 billion debt collection industry. Yeah, making profits from debts that the financial industry wrote off. And it could even be more profitable because you have our country's consumer debt record hitting a pretty high number, $4 trillion this year. $4 trillion. Wrap your head around that. That's a lot, right? $4 trillion. Ooh. That may be the biggest number I think I've ever... No, it's not the biggest number I've ever uttered in this segment, but it's a pretty big one. right? Of course it is. Absolutely. All right, moving along, this is pretty interesting. When we look at the, you know, kind of this petty fight. It's not kind of, it is a petty fight. So people hate emojis, like emojis. People are picky about what their neighbors paint on their houses or how they display whatever it is they're displaying. You know, that's like the whole HOA thing when you can only do XYZ. So emojis are bright yellow, we know that. And at this one neighborhood in Manhattan Beach, California, there was a house, there is a house, painted with a bright yellow emoji, long eyelashes. Picture this, your neighbor has this on their house. Long eyelashes, crisscrossed eyes, a tongue kind of lolls out. The other mouth is zippered shut. And they're painted against a pink facade of this beach. Well, it's not a beach, I'm a regular home in Manhattan Beach. And it's become a Hatfield's and McCoy's special because they're feuding. And now it's a fight with the city. What are you going to do? And so the woman who came into the neighborhood, though, she already had people on edge because she just was more flamboyant. She drove a Mercedes convertible. She had a license plate holder that said, "Move over, Princess, the Queen has arrived." So they think, they're accusing her of using her property for short-term rentals, which are illegal in Manhattan Beach. The neighbors outed her to the city. They fined her $4,000 in May. And so, of course, what did she do? She turned around and she painted the emoji, or had it painted, on her house. Oh, my. Oh. I don't know. You know what? You rat on somebody, and they're going to come back at you. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. So who knows? They say she's a bully. She feels she's entitled. She wants to make things uncomfortable for us. So the spats between neighbors are obviously very, very common. And we saw what happened to Senator Rand Paul in the hospital with 6 broken ribs in 2017. How's that possible? They're saying it might have been politically motivated, but that was a neighbor. An emoji on the property? Is that anything to do with getting retaliation on the neighbors? Ooh, it kind of feels that way to me. I'm just saying. You know, you can't choose your neighbors. I always think this. You know, you save your money, you drive around XYZ neighborhood, wherever you live, whether you're getting, you feel like you're getting a good deal on a house or a rental or whatever it is. But do you know the neighbors? And the answer is, you don't. Right? You don't know. And hopefully all of you listening to me have incredible neighbors who would do nothing untoward to you, and they would do helpful things for you. If something, if you were in trouble, they would help you out. I will say I have good neighbors. I don't see them all the time, but they're really good. If something happened, they would be there in a second. They've closed garages and done other things for us. And I think, well, I don't think, I know I would do the same thing for them as well. But it's just one of those weird things. And sometimes this happened with my cousin. She didn't have an emoji on her house, didn't have to paint an emoji, but grew close to the neighbors. And then the neighbor turned out to be a little bit, let's say, unbalanced. And before you know it, they had to sell their house because they couldn't take it anymore. They sold the house and they moved to another neighborhood. This one seems like a keeper. They've been there for a while. I know some of you are chuckling. If you've got a good story, you have to share it with me. Send it to me at katedelaneyradio.com because I know there's more stories. I know it. Good stories out there. I mean, some of them probably are, but with neighbors being helpful and not the opposite. Okay, so let's move to this one. The missile expulsion in Russia has panicked a few people. There was an explosion that caused an expulsion, but an explosion at a Russian base killed, a military base, killed three people and caused a spike in radioactivity. You know what that's like in Russia. So the Russian Defense Ministry has said that no dangerous substances were released into the atmosphere during the incident. But other government agencies said there was a spike in radiation. It took place near a village of Ninisko, where a Russian naval missile test range is located. They haven't given a lot of specifics on it, of course. It took place over a barge, the explosion. And as a result of the accident, they say six representatives of the Ministry of Defense and Developer Enterprise were injured, varying degrees of injuries. But most of the news reports said two were dead and eight wounded from it. And then there were other reports with different numbers, too. That's kind of the normal thing. Who knows what is the right number or not. But the Centers for Disease Control say potassium iodide is to prevent the buildup of the radioactive isotope in the thyroid gland, which could lead to thyroid cancer. It's produced commercially for medical and industrial uses through nuclear fission. So they, when they were bringing in the injured, they were advising everyone to close their windows and drink iodine, actually. And 44 drops per glass of water. I don't know. I'm thinking if they're advising me to do that, that, yeah, there might be some radioactivity and they're concerned about it. Why would they tell me to drink iodine in my water and don't come out? Don't come out. That would scare me. I'm thinking there's more to it. But, you know, we never get the true story from Russia. And of course we don't. There's just different numbers, either exaggerated or not inflated. We don't know where they are. Here's another one when it comes to numbers, and we look at Lyft, you know, Uber and Lyft, and the wars over picking you up where it's not a yellow taxi. Some people swear by Lyft because they don't like what Uber's done, and it continues to bleed money, though, in its second quarter. They said they expect to stem some of the losses, but they posted revenue of $867.3 million. That's up 72% from the same time last year. But they lost money in the quarter, $664.2 million, which was worse than what had been predicted. So that's not good for the health of the company overall, because they've got to be able to improve that, and they've got to be able to give an affordable ride, but yet make a profit. Same old song, huh? Hang with us. I'll meet you on the flip side.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with John DeMaster.
Democratic presidential candidate speaking out about the death of Jeffrey Epstein. Kirsten Gillibrand on CBS's Face the Nation saying,
"He's survivors deserved a day in court. They deserved justice. They deserved to speak out against this perpetrator.
She says it's a shame that the 66-year-old pedophile committed suicide, saying there needs to be a full investigation as to what took him off suicide watch to begin with. Epstein awaiting trial for sex trafficking charges and had just been taken off suicide watch. Attorney General Bill Barr calling for a full investigation. Acting Homeland Security Director Kevin McAleenan addressing last week's ICE raids in Mississippi, where nearly 700 illegals were arrested. McAleenan telling NBC's Meet the Press the raids had been planned for over a year.
In terms of the ICE operations, these are enforcement operations that are part of their daily cycle. Something like this has been planned for over a year. This is a criminal investigation.
This is USA Radio News.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with The Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-370-2715.
There's a place for answers. A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-370-2715. That's 1-800-370-2715.
The Genesis Communications Network is one of America's premier broadcasters of captivating talk radio. We thank you for listening. Now, just imagine, there are thousands of people who are just as passionate about radio as you are. But what you may not realize is how easy and affordable it is to advertise with us. Radio commercials for your business could be heard on hundreds of radio stations across the U.S. every day. We can help you by creating an effective radio advertising campaign for your company. From script writing to producing your commercial, just like the one you're listening to right now. No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Tell you, having a conversation with Father Peter Vu off the air was such a treat for me, and the various things that we were able to discuss before we actually now have sat down to do this interview that all of you are listening to. What an interesting man, and what an interesting road he's taken to his vocation, and what a treat to have him on the show. And he's written a book called Living for a Higher Purpose, Story of a City Boy Who Survived the Vietnam War by Living for Jesus and Others. And this is certainly inspirational, and it's a memoir, and there's a lot of history here. So, Father Vu, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Kate. Let me send you and our listeners the native greeting from the people of Vietnam. Good morning, Vietnam, in the voice of Robin Williams. And the weather today is hot and humid, tomorrow hot and humid, and basically the same for the rest of the week.
Bravo, well done. You have a sense of humor. I love that sense of humor. And I'm sure that sense of humor helped you get through some really, really tough times. Take us back, because you talk about the history of what it was like, because you were there as a young boy in Vietnam. What was it like for you in Vietnam, what you saw, and how you escaped that?
Well, Kate and audience, I was 5 years old when the war ended. You know, everything was exploding around me, but like anything, my parents was able to keep me from all that. We didn't watch a lot of that on the news, and I didn't know the war ended until the last day. And you know, everything. My house is about 5-10 minutes bicycle ride from Tanzania Airport. And I saw, you know, airplanes, you know, running into the buildings and everything else, tanks all over the road, soldiers, you know, running naked and, you know, a lot of carnage on the street. I thought that was the last day that being described in the book of Revelation. And, of course, after that, you know, the horrific, you know, life under communist system. And my dad was taken to the concentration camp when I was 5 years old. And I had to find out where they took him and go to visit him. And then I did not see him. And by the miracle, he was released when I was in high school senior year. So life after the war was very tough, say the least. And I had to grow up fast. And, you know, everything there under the communist is something that regular people don't know how it was like. I myself basically tried to be the man of the home for my mom. And I remember when she and I went to visit my dad, it took us quite a few times to track down where he was and to bring food and to see him. And I basically had to go get all the basic necessity, you know, for the family, you know, from going to the well to get water, to get all the rice and basic necessity for the family. I remember the, you know, when the rice ran out, mostly in the book of Prophet Isaiah, you know, when the poor widow and the son did not have anything left. I thought that was, you know, the last day. But like in the Bible, I saw that miracles happen with the rice being filled up in my house because the communist was able to open up, you know, the rice distribution a little early. And so I went through all that. And of course, I don't know if you and the listener remember, this is the late 80s. So the Khmer Rouge was in Cambodia, killed a lot of people, and China was amassing a lot of troops on the north border of Vietnam. So I and all my friends, you know, was drafted when we were only in 10th grade to learn how all about weapons and how to take up arms and all that. So that was quite an experience in itself. And of course, you know, I myself, you know, had to make a decision whether to stay in Vietnam or to leave and follow my God's calling, my own vocation.
And for you to leave Vietnam, what was it like to leave Vietnam? How did you make that decision? And you see, now we see immigration and the crisis we're having at the border. Does that bring back memories for you? We see what's happening in South Florida with Cubans that were trying to escape and were on boats, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that was a tough decision, Kate. I myself, I was only 16 when I had to make that decision. And leaving everything behind was difficult because I grew up with, you know, my most Asian families are very quite, you know, connected. And we lived together for 3 or 4 generations in the same household. So leaving everything, family and friends, was difficult. And heading for the unknown was difficult too. I don't know what happened, you know, about America. I just know it's a wonderful land, just like God's people in the Bible. I mean, they're trying to look for the promised land, but they don't know what's there. And I myself had to discern that. And, you know, if I stay, I would have to, you know, I would have to go to Cambodia to fight the Khmer Rouge or go up north to fight China. My dad worked for the South Vietnam, so I could not, go to college, because they don't want, you know, people who work for the former regime, you know, the children, grandchildren to succeed because they might turn against the communists. So I didn't have any choice, Kate. So I have to, make that decision to go out into the unknown, and almost like the darkness of the soul. I did not succeed. You know, I had to try 3-4 times. And in the book, I describe how those failed times I had to go through. And one time I was captured. All the time I was able to escape. So when I was captured, they put me in, in prison, almost like the political prisoners, even though we ourselves, we just tried to sneak out. And, enduring all the interrogations and harsh living, which I didn't have to deal with that before. It was quite eye-opening. And then, of course, the last time I tried with persistence, I was able to succeed, and that was quite a trip in itself. Remind me a lot of the trip out Egypt for God's people. I live in Saigon, so I had to sneak out at night, go to some area close to the river, and, these contact will take me to from one small boat to the next boat, and finally, if everything goes well, then we would end up in the big boat. And in order for me to have those trips, my family had to pay the price for that, and it could go up to to a few thousand dollars. And the last trip, I myself was put in this boat, and it was a harrowing experience in itself, Kate. We thought we would get caught because I could hear the Coast Guard people ask, what's underneath the ship. And the captain basically said, only fish. And somehow, by miracle, they believed that, so they did not search. And so the next thing we know that we went through that, and why that whole thing, the search was happening. Little kids also cry. And we thought we would, the cover would be blown and we would get captured. And somehow, through that dark night, I look up in the sky. I could only see the stars and and nothing else. And the next morning, we found out that we were in the international water. So the captain let us, go up to the, to the deck and get some, some fresh air. Of course, we were not fishermen, so, the sea was make us seasick. And then, and of course, tar, from the boat, make us get sick. We did not have food or water. They gave us just enough water to last. Our boat was floating at sea for, 7 days, almost over a week before we get rescued. So during that time, we ran into a big storm, Kate, and that storm was, was biggest storm I ever seen. Later, I came over here and saw the movie, The Perfect Storm, and tears rolling down my eyes because that was, a similar storm that I went through. I thought that night we would never make it. We prayed for rain, and the next thing we know that we got a big storm. The storm basically, the wave was like about over 20 feet high. And it cracked, the front of the boat, and we thought the boat would get torn apart.
Wow.
So we survived the storm. Yeah, we survived the storm. And, just like they say, be careful what you pray for, you might get it. So we got the water. So the water went inside the boat. And the boat itself is a dinky little boat. Had about 70 people.
Wow, 70, 80 people. Father Vu, can you stay with us for another segment and continue this story?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. so, it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dehebo Tea Club's original pure Powdy Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com, 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at HBExtract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. HBExtract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Hi, I'm Adam Baratta, author of the book Gold is a Better Way. It became a national bestseller. It's now become a movement. My member site went live 1 year ago, and since that time, gold is up $250. It's outperforming the highest flying stock market in history by 15%. And for the first time, I'm opening up my live gold summit to non-members. This is a $1,500 ticket for free. Join me and my over 5,000 members via live stream on August 14th. And learn the secrets to the next gold boom. The event is for investors with over $100,000. If that's you, text the words Gold Summit to 49776. That's the words Gold Summit to 49776. Get your $1,500 ticket for free for our August 14th live event now. Text Gold Summit to 49776 and join the movement. Text the words Gold Summit to 49776. That's the words Gold Summit to 49776.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Of For Your Health, I'm pleased to introduce to you Dr. Kristen Higgins. She's a radiation oncologist at Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University. And we're talking about something really specific with lung cancer. There's a new treatment that's giving hope to patients with unresectable stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer, and we're going to explain what that is. And I just was talking to somebody who was diagnosed with this, and I know that there are other people who are dealing with it, so this is so timely to have Dr. Higgins on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about that. What are the biggest challenges in diagnosing and treating stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer?
Sure. So first let me differentiate the stage of lung cancer that we're talking about. So stage 3 lung cancer means that the cancer has spread to the surrounding lymph nodes in the center part of your chest. And that's really critical because that drives the treatment for this lung cancer. It's different than a stage 4 lung cancer where the cancer has spread to other organs outside of your chest. For example, your brain or your liver or your bones or what have you. And one of the challenges really in lung cancer is making sure that we clearly understand the stage of the cancer because the treatment is vastly different, whether it's a stage 3 or a stage 4. My message is to make sure that the studies are being done to clearly define the stage of cancer, because if it is a stage 3, we have a great treatment paradigm that is curing more patients. And I think it's really important. Sometimes we still see patients having this nihilistic view of lung cancer and thinking, well, you know, it's lung cancer. I'm throwing in the towel. I have no chance. And I want to educate people so that they understand that that really is not the case now in 2019. You know, this cancer is different than your mother's lung cancer or your grandmother's lung cancer, and we have much more effective treatments.
Yeah, wow. So that's significant, obviously. So very, very important to understand the difference, what it means, and then the test is so important, right? Obviously.
Yeah, so it's very important, first of all, that you have had the lymph nodes biopsied to prove that it is indeed a stage 3 lung cancer, because sometimes, you know, you can have an enlarged lymph node in your chest and it's due to infection. So, you know, if your doctors are telling you that, you need to say, well, please make sure it's biopsied, because I need to confirm that, you know, that is the stage of cancer that I have. So as a patient, you know, knowing what questions to ask to make sure that your cancer is assigned the proper stage is really critical. So make sure that the lymph nodes are getting sampled. Make sure that you're getting a whole body PET scan, and make sure that you're getting an MRI of your brain. Those are the critical pieces for making that determination of stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer.
Yeah, and so with that, and you're saying that, that you don't have to throw in the towel, so survival rates, Doc, must be improving with stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer to be able to say that, right?
Yes. So we have a treatment paradigm for stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer now, and I'm just going to take a moment to describe what that is. So what the standard treatment now, it's radiation and chemotherapy given together for 6 weeks, and that was always the backbone of treatment, but now we've added in immunotherapy after the radiation and chemotherapy if the cancer has not spread, and this is with a drug called Imfinzi. And what Imfinzi does is it causes your immune system to recognize the cancer as being something that should not be in your body and attack it, essentially. And the Imfinzi is given every few weeks for a total of 1 year for our stage 3 lung cancer patients after they finish the radiation and chemo. And with this new treatment, we're seeing the relative risk of death actually reduced by about 32%. And
wow,
that's really significant for these patients. And I have so much more hope when I'm counseling patients on what their prognosis is now for stage 3 lung cancer. But I will say one of the barriers, we're talking about barriers to treatment here, is that still I see a lot of stage 3 patients that aren't even getting referred for the chemotherapy and radiation part of the treatment. And if you don't get that treatment, we can't give the immunotherapy afterwards. So as a patient, as a family member, it's really important that when you go in to meet your team that's going to treat your cancer, that you're making sure that you're getting state-of-the-art, data-driven treatment that is up to date.
Yeah, so for somebody like you, Doc, who's focused on this, I mentioned a little bit about your background. This has to be exciting. 32% is an incredible number, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. I'm so happy to be changing the stigma that exists with lung cancer, and it still is there. So, you know, by talking with you, I hope that we can just spread the word and help patients and family members understand that lung cancer is not a death sentence anymore, and that you can be cured. If you have a stage 3 lung cancer, you can be cured of it, and that's what we're working towards doing with this treatment.
Yeah, and as you said, it's a therapy, and you take it for a year. What is it? How every couple of weeks? What did you say specifically?
Yeah, so it's every 2 weeks, and it's given through your vein, so intravenously. You go to an infusion center, you know, probably the same place that you go to get your chemotherapy with the radiation, and you sit there for a few hours while the infusion happens. And of course, there are always some side effects of any cancer treatment, and it's important to talk with your doctor about what those side effects may be. With immunotherapy, mainly the side effects that we're looking for are side effects or signs of an overactive immune system. So, you know, your immune system causing inflammation of your lung or your colon or your thyroid, things like that. Those are potential side effects that we could see.
Yeah. And we're speaking with Dr. Kristen Higgins, radiation oncologist at Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University. And I just want to give a shout out to where you are, because Emory really is on the cutting edge of so much that's happening, isn't it?
Yes, So we're an NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center, and what that means is that the National Cancer Institute has recognized what we have as being, you know, a center of excellence, and we have a lot of clinical trials that are open for patients to get, you know, these cutting-edge treatments that may help them, and we have a lot of resources to help family members and, you know, just help with the logistics of cancer treatment, because it is a challenge. It's hard. It's not easy. And our job is to, you know, give you the tools that you need to get through the treatment successfully.
Yeah, and just to clear up any misconceptions, who, when we talk about lung cancer, who mostly are the people that are getting lung cancer? Because the demographics have changed a little bit, haven't they?
They are, and I'm glad you asked that question, because there is still the stigma that only smokers get lung cancer, and that's just not true. We see lung cancer in non-smokers. We see lung cancer in non-smokers that have had secondhand smoke exposure. We see lung cancers that are, you know, driven from mutations and, you know, with people that have never picked up a cigarette in their life. So, you know, this is not a disease that should be stigmatized. You know, any patient that has lung cancer should be, you know, treated and given all the best treatment options possible. We're really working as a field to get more government funding to study lung cancer, because we really haven't had as much funding as things like breast cancer and things like that to do these clinical trials that we need to make advancements for lung cancer.
Yeah, but there's hope, definitely. So Dr. Kristen Higgins, thanks so much for joining us. This is great news, and you're a terrific guest on this edition of For Your Health.
Thank you.
Wow, so that was really revealing, I think, especially if you paid attention to, one, that there's this treatment available, don't throw in the towel, but also who could possibly be diagnosed with lung cancer, because you have these misconceptions about being diagnosed, who gets diagnosed with it, all of that. And the fact that Dr. Higgins mentioned, you know, the survival rates that are improving for patients with stage 3 non-small cell lung cancer, boy, I think that gives great hope to a lot of people. My grandmother had lung cancer, and of course they didn't have those treatments available at that time when she was diagnosed with it. But now the fact that they've got this therapy, and it's something that's doable, and you pair it with chemotherapy, boy, fascinating to hear what Doc Higgins had to say about that. And like I said, because I know somebody recently who had a diagnosis like this, the fact that they asked a lot of questions, the fact that they knew to get treatment and how to go about getting that treatment is so, so vital. And everything that we talked about, and she mentioned it, the questions, what you're feeling, all of that is so important, writing all that stuff down and then getting the information you need, because you're much more armed with the facts. And I think the fact that there's this bright light and something's happening that you can do with it thanks to this information that's out there is wonderful, and again gives hope to so many people who find themselves feeling like they're in a hopeless situation. So once again, just a terrific edition of For Your Health.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, what the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success, and why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now. Anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.